Ladies and gentlemen,
it is a long journey to this moment.
Thank you so much for this incredible honor.
Naturally indebted to
truly, truly grateful.
And the Oscar goes to...
Hello, and welcome to Thank the Academy, the podcast where we talk about every Academy Award-winning Best Picture film in order. We're your hosts, Zach and Kristen, and that's Kayla, our producer.
Howdy.
Dun, 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 dun. Welcome. We are talking about... Well, it's like one of the most iconic scenes ever. Chariots of Fire.
Yes.
Which, of course, you know, just from that little musical riff.
Yes.
And the slow motion.
Slow-mo running.
Of course, this is the 54th Academy Awards and
yes.
The Best Picture winner, Chariots of Fire.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who may not have ever actually seen this movie, because I hadn't seen it before this, spoiler, that theme is only used at the beginning and the end of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's the theme of the movie.
But why not within the movie? It was like the weird synth running at the beginning and the weird synth at the end, and that was it.
That's all it needed to become like one of the most iconic scores and songs of all time.
I thought, though, like the big race was going to be the music, and it wasn't.
I mean, there were multiple big races.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like one of the most, like, even if you've never seen this movie, you know, like... slow-mo running and that song,
right?
Which is crazy.
Yeah,
some people say that that is like the reason why this had any success at all,
huh?
Is that moment.
But what was so compelling about it?
I don't know.
Maybe it was built up in my mind, but I was very underwhelmed when it happened, and that was it. Like, I was like, what? Where's the rest?
I mean, it's just so iconic to see them all running on the beach with the song. I don't know.
Okay.
It's just so 80s also.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll get into all of that, as well as talking about the ceremony. But first, we have some Penny news.
The news about Penny. A pup date.
So Penny has been pretty busy as of late.
Yes, she has. She's a busy girl.
Yes, Penny? Do you have something to
say? She says, yes, I have been. Penny.
But... recently, Penny had a very busy week when your family came to town.
Yeah, my mom and dad visited. Yay!
Yeah, to see the big old city and all the dreams.
And all the stars.
But Penny loves them, of
course. Oh, yeah. Penny loves them. I mean, Penny knows both of our parents very well, just from holidays and life and being doted on extremely well when she's around them.
Mm-hmm.
She knows who the treat man is.
Uh-huh.
That's Bob.
Yep. And Bosley knows him as the treat man as well.
No, but it was really sweet. I mean, what a great week. And Penny just had so much fun. They stayed with us. And so, you know, in the mornings we'd get up and Penny would go right over to the door and scratch to be let in and wanted to make sure that when they took naps, she took naps with them. And when we watched TV, she got to sit with them and... yeah, it's very sweet.
Well, and then she also got to hang out with Charles.
Yeah, our friend Charles.
So shout out to Charles.
For dog sitting for us while we were in Disneyland for a couple days.
Yeah. Penny and Bosley love Charles.
Yes, they do. He's their best friend.
And then
we had adventures too.
Yeah, we forced Penny to go on a hike with us.
Yep.
Which, much to her chagrin.
Yes, she was did. Very hot, but she did it. She did a great job.
Of course, then she loved going to the beach.
Yes. I was so excited to take my parents to the beach with Penny because, like, that's not something we've ever done together. And of course, Penny's a new girl at the beach.
Yeah. She loves it.
She's a different dog.
Long-time listeners of the pod know.
Yes. And so my parents were pleasantly surprised to see how excited she was about the water. And she did do something new this time, which is she started digging in the sand.
Yeah,
that
it's pretty easy to show her to do stuff, and then she does it.
Yeah, so like I could tell she was kind of like interested in the sand.
Well, there were a lot of little
like crab things,
creature things in the sand.
And she was kind of like following them and sniffing them. And so you like started to scratch at the sand and like show her what to do. And then she was like, oh my gosh.
I can dig in the sand.
And just started digging and digging and like following the little creatures.
Little weird crab things.
Yeah.
But she loved it.
Yep. She had a great time.
Loves
great
to find
time
a
with
good
Bob
stick.
And Kathy. Loves a stick.
Throw around on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of treats.
Yeah. And lots of snuggling. She loves having my mom and dad because they both are very snuggly with her.
Mm-hmm. And Bosley got a lot out of it, too.
Of course, he did. Yes. Bosley's such a good boy. And they don't know him very well. Mm-hmm. So they love spending time with him, too.
But this is not Bosley news.
This is not the Bosley news.
But good job, Penny.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we get to this ceremony?
Yeah. Yeah.
The 54th?
The 54th. Yes. To be honest, there's not a ton to report this week. As far as ceremonies go, pretty straightforward. And that's what all the reviews said, too.
It's funny how they've, like, really course-corrected.
Because
in the 80s, they're all just, like, classic, no-nonsense,
mm-hmm.
nothing
well,
going
like,
on.
Almost every review that I read about this ceremony was, like, it was perfectly fine. The speeches were concise. The ceremony didn't drag on too long. There was nothing exciting about the ceremony. It just was.
I feel like the only controversy of any kind is that Chariots of Fire did win Best Picture.
Yeah, it was a surprise for sure. It was not the front runner going into it. Most people were thinking it would be Reds or On Golden Pond, one of the films that was much more nominated. But
or even Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, could have been.
Yeah.
So. Anyways, this ceremony was held on March 29th, 1982 at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. It was produced by Howard Koch, directed by Marty Pesita, and hosted once again by Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
So this is his third consecutive hosting
wow.
of the ceremony. It was originally going to be produced by Melvin Frank, who's a director, producer. He was also a writer. His most famous thing is he was one of the writers on White Christmas.
Right.
So he's been in the industry for a long time. However, he ended up getting sick. He was hospitalized for like a viral thing. And so they went to Howard Koch and was like, hey, old timer, you know what's going on. Can you step
in? Again.
And so he did make a statement that all of the artistic contributions that Melvin Frank had already done stayed intact
for
the festivities. But he just oversaw the rest of the production. Mm. So kind of sad. I didn't look ahead, so I don't know if he's going to come back in the future or not. We'll find out in real time.
Uh-huh.
So this ceremony actually did a little bit better than last year's ceremony. It drew in an average of 46.2 million people for the whole ceremony, which was a 6% increase from last year.
Huh. I wonder why.
I was trying to think, but I don't know. Maybe the movie.
And of course, last year being the 53rd Academy Awards.
Ordinary people.
Yes.
So I don't know, maybe the movies just like were a little more interesting this year to the general public. I don't know, hard to know. It also drew a higher Nielsen rating. It was 33.6% of households watching with a 53% share. So you know, a little better than last time. It did receive 3 nominations at the 34th Primetime Emmys, but it did not win this year. It was a little bit surprising that it won this year. It wasn't in the top 5 films that were nominated. Reds had 12 nominations. On Golden Pond had 10. Raiders of the Lost Ark had 9. Ragtime had 8. Like, there were a lot of other films ahead of it. It only had 7. And the rest of the movies that were, like, had multiple nominations, I don't even know what they are.
Uh-oh.
Like, they're not movies that have crossed my radar. So, like, it's just very interesting. I feel like it pulled ahead in an interesting way. And a lot of people did say in the reviews of the ceremony that that was the most interesting part of it, was like that was the most unexpected part. Everything else was a little bit like predictable or hopeful or whatever. But like that was the big kind of shock.
I have a few ideas.
You have theories?
theories about why this may have won. But we'll get to that.
I am confused, I will say, personally.
This wasn't your favorite one? That's so strange. You didn't actively dislike it.
I didn't dislike it. Yeah, I don't have any ill will against this movie.
Down with Chariots of Fire.
I just thought it was boring, honestly. Like, and the whole time here's what it was for me.
You will resonate with a lot of what I'm going to say later. Because you're going to be like, Of course, it felt just like that.
Okay. And, all right. Well, yeah. I'll tell you my thought right now, which is that for me, this movie just didn't have any stakes. Like, mm-hmm. that was the problem for me. Yeah. And the stakes don't have to be huge for me, but they have to be interesting. Mm-hmm. So that's why I didn't really enjoy it.
Well, you don't really care about sports that much.
I care nothing about sports.
And so when they're like, we have to win sports like, or else. I'm it's like, what? Or else what? You don't win sports.
Oh,
big
no,
deal.
You didn't get a medal. Oh. Poor boys. Also, when there are no women in the movie, I really couldn't care less. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I will say, I did love the fashion.
Yeah.
I commented on that like the whole time we watched it.
Yeah, the fashion was great.
Men should wear short shorts again.
Mm. A lot do.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad it's kind of come back around. this year, there was the addition of Best Makeup as a category, mm-hmm. which we talked extensively about last time. Mostly spurred on by the lack of recognition for the Elephant Man. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple of honorary awards in the past, but now it's officially a category. So the Academy Executive Administrator of the time, John Pavlik, said that it would be a special committee composed of makeup artists, hairstylists, cinematographers, and other related craftspeople who would determine if at least one film was worthy of such an award. So there wasn't going to be, at least in this first year or so, there wasn't going to be like a minimum amount of films that had to be nominated or anything. It was basically like, if there is something worth nominating, it can be nominated. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to, but you know, whatever. The requirements to become an Academy member of the branch of makeup and hairstyling has changed. As I just mentioned, it was composed of a lot of different categories.
Right.
Now, of course, it's just people who are in makeup and hairstyling.
Right.
To become a member, you have to have a minimum of 7 years experience in makeup or hairstyling for theatrical feature films and have a supervisory position on at least 5 theatrical feature films, at least 3 within the last 7 years of a caliber, which is high of standards of the Academy, or you must be nominated for an Academy Award in makeup and hairstyling or have achieved special, you know,
recognition.
Whatever. So like now, of
that's
course,
a lot of qualifiers.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's either the first two or the being nominated or having done something crazy.
Right.
So not crazy, but something creative
really
and amazing.
Awesome.
And starting in 1993, the award started to become shared with hairstylists. So right now it's just best makeup.
Okay.
In 93, they will start to incorporate the concept of hairstyling into the category as well without changing the title of it.
Right.
So it's just if the hairstyle effects, quote, contribute greatly to the appearance and effect of the characters. And then finally, at the 85th Academy...
Which usually they do. I have to say... I mean, hairstyles are such a huge part of characterization that, like, you could easily give somebody a really crazy hairstyle that would totally change the whole movie.
Picture Beetlejuice with his makeup, but normal hair.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyways.
But yes, you are right.
Shout out to all the hairstylists. Yeah. Apologies for the years of...
being shoved to the side. If it contributes, maybe. But as I was about to say, at the 85th Academy Awards in 2013, isn't that crazy how recent that was? 2013, the name of the category was changed to Best Makeup and Hairstyling to officially include hairstylists in the category.
Hmm.
So that's that. It's a coming. It's starting up.
Good for them. Overdue.
Much overdue. So this year, Best Director winner, Warren Beatty, becomes the first person to earn acting, directing, producing, and screenwriting nominations for the same film for a second time.
Uh-huh.
So he's already done this.
Yes, for Heaven Can Wait.
Yes, exactly, in 1978. So good
for
him.
I talked all about that in an episode about Heaven Can Wait.
This year, also, we've talked about this a little bit leading up to it, but it has happened now. On Golden Pond was the fifth film to win both lead acting awards.
Which is crazy that it's only the fifth in all of this time.
Yeah.
Out of 54 years of it happening.
Yep. Henry Fonda, of course, and Katharine Hepburn winning Best Actor and Best Actress.
Extremely well-deserved for both of them.
Great. I haven't watched this yet. I'm watching it this week, so I will report back on this. But I'm very excited to watch it. I know I'm going to like it.
Yeah. And I'm going to talk about it for my archives.
Yeah, for our the next Academy Archives episode.
There's quite a few films to go into, but I feel like this is the most in line with what we normally talk about.
It's also like an Academy film.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In the truest sense of the word. And I talked about this tiny bit when I talked about Jane Fonda as well. Henry Fonda wins his first competitive Oscar for Best Actor in this one. Mm-hmm. Sadly, he was too ill to attend the ceremony, and he died just about 4 months afterwards. So his daughter, Jane, accepted it for him. I did watch her speech, and it was very emotional. She wasn't emotional. I was emotional.
I mean, the moments, I'll talk about this also, but like the moments in the film where they really connect are like also very emotional because you know,
how
I mean, if you know, their relationship and what it took for them to get this movie made and all of that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww. So I can understand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very sweet. She speaks very highly of him. She doesn't have a speech from him, so she's just speaking on his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Jane Fonda is a very well-spoken person, and she is very gracious. She said some beautiful words about Katharine Hepburn and his relationship and friendship with her, and what a joy it was to work with her. She says beautiful things about the crew, and like really recognizes and highlights not just the people who were nominated for stuff tonight, but like the rest of the people involved in the making of it. And she even talks about how, as a daughter, she is very proud and she believes that he was proud of her and how special that is. I mean, it's good stuff. So.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody's very happy for this win. And she said right at the beginning of the speech that he probably was at home. And when he saw this, he said, wow, what luck. but she was like, of course, it has nothing to do with luck, but he will never admit that.
Yeah.
Which is just very sweet. Really, really lovely. Also, leading right into this, Best Actress winner Katharine Hepburn becomes the first and only performer to win 4 competitive acting Oscars.
Pretty amazing.
Yes. And on top of that, there is a 48-year span between her first win in 1933 for the film Morning Glory and her last win for this film On Golden Pond, which has set the record for the longest span between which first and last career Oscar nominations have happened.
Wow. Hmm.
So
that's crazy.
Yeah. Pretty cool. So congrats to the actors who really pulled it out this year.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I just have to mention, of course, is Bette Midler presents for Best Song.
Mm.
And she is one of the highlights of the night because she does basically the whole thing off the cuff. She is doing her own stand-up routine, like truly.
Nice.
And so I watched it because I saw a bunch of notes on it, like in articles and like even on like the Academy Awards website that has like an overview of what the ceremony was. It's one of the things. It was like one of the standouts of the night was Bette Midler for her off-the-cuff remarks. And I was like, I just said I got to watch it.
I mean, she is one of the standouts in everything she does. So
well, she's,
makes sense.
She's very funny. She's very opinionated. And
of course.
It's a little bit inappropriate, I would say, for the caliber of the Academy Awards because she's like announcing the titles of each of the nominees. And she's like, I didn't really like that one. And then this this is the one that should win. And then just like, she's given little opinions about each one as she reads them, making jokes about them, what they're like, whatever. Before she does all of that, she makes a bunch of jokes about the Academy and her outfit and all kinds of stuff. So that's like one of the things that people and the audience is roaring with laughter.
I mean, that's like her whole brand during this time is that she's a very opinionated, funny woman. So,
yeah, she's magnetic when you watch her. Like,
I mean, she's one of the best performers ever lived, so not surprising.
Well, she certainly made a name for herself and was one of the call outs of the evening.
Great.
And the last thing that people also refer to as the other, like, highlight of the evening was there was a special award, an honorary award, given to Barbara Stanwyck for her contribution to the art of screen acting. It officially said, quote, superlative creativity and unique contribution to the art of screen acting. And she received the evening's only standing ovation.
Oh, wow.
And what was particularly moving about it was that she and the late William Holden had presented together a few years earlier. And while they were doing it, he praised her for saving his career. And just talked very sweetly about her. So at the end of her speech, she was very emotional. And she said, quote, a few years ago, I stood on the stage with William Holden as a presenter. I loved him very much and I miss him. He always wished that I would get an Oscar. So tonight, my golden boy, you got your wish. Mm. And like, of course, everybody lost it.
Very cute.
So very sweet. Very well deserved. Of course, she had been in the business forever. And, you know, sadly, her work was never recognized with an Oscar win. So now she has something in that place.
Congrats to her.
Yeah. So that's what I have to share about this Academy Awards ceremony. No crashers or political statements or anything crazy going on.
Wow.
So no mistakes of any high caliber. So of course, we'll share all of our winners for the evening.
Do it.
Best Picture goes to Chariots of Fire.
Mm-hmm.
David Putnam, producer. Best Director goes to Warren Beatty for Reds. Best Actor goes to Henry Fonda for On Golden Pond. Best Actress goes to Katharine Hepburn for On Golden Pond. Best Supporting Actor goes to John Gielgud for Arthur. And Best Supporting Actress goes to Maureen Stapleton for Reds. Best Screenplay written directly for the screen goes to Chariots of Fire. Best Screenplay based on material from another medium goes to On Golden Pond. Best Foreign Language Film goes to Mephisto from Hungary. Best Documentary Feature goes to Genocide. Best Documentary Short Subject goes to Close Harmony. Best Live Action Short Film goes to Violet. Best Animated Short Film goes to Crack. Best Original Score goes to Chariots of Fire. Best Original Song goes to Arthur's Theme, Best That You Can Do, from Arthur. Best Sound goes to Raiders of the Lost Ark. Best Makeup goes to, for the first time ever, An American Werewolf in London. Mm-hmm. Rick Baker is our first winner. Best Costume Design goes to Chariots of Fire, which is so deserved, I will say. I'm not sure about any of the other things, but that is deserved. The whole time, I was like, they all look so cute. Everything about it is very adorable. Best Art Direction goes to Raiders of the Lost Ark, which I thought was a pretty cool win. Like, you know, it is such a
specific film.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, it has so much escapism in it that is so wrapped up in the world, but it has to be realistic still. So anyways, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Best Cinematography goes to Reds, which I did think it was weird that Chariots of Fire was not nominated for that at all.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that it wasn't nominated for Art Direction or Cinematography.
Oh, yeah. Art Direction, too, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that, but there is a lot of, like, the Olympic stuff that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Best Film Editing goes to Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Best Visual Effects also goes to Raiders of the Lost Ark. And as I mentioned, there's an honorary award given to Barbara Stanwyck. The Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award goes to Danny Kaye.
Huzzah!
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. He did so much with UNICEF and, like, children's charities.
Yeah, yeah. The Irving G. Thalberg Memorial Award goes to Albert R. Broccoli, a.k.a. Cubby Broccoli. Broccoli.
Classic James Bond producer.
Yes, yes. His body of work was being honored with this award. And finally, there is a special achievement award given to Ben Burt and Richard L. Anderson for the sound effects editing of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah,
which,
nice.
Like, I think is pretty cool, but, like, I'm not... I didn't really see what it entailed, like, why it was being recognized specifically, but pretty cool.
I mean, you've seen
the movie, yes.
Well, and also the sound editing feature at
the
Academy
right.
Museum, all about the sound effects editing.
That's true. I do recall that now.
Yeah.
It's just not something I think about too much. Yeah. So it's hard for me to recognize it, but that's pretty cool.
It is interesting. I will say I did watch this. I rewatched this just recently as we're in this era and this Academy Awards. And it was really, like, weird to watch it because I haven't seen it probably in over 15 years.
Yeah.
And I remember just loving all of the Indiana Jones when I was a kid.
Mm.
And I was a little bit I don't know. It was not as good as I remembered it being.
Oh, no.
It just like doesn't have as much substance as I felt like it did.
Well, maybe you were a kid.
I mean, it's all action adventure.
Yeah.
Purely.
Okay. Gotcha.
Which like I just kind of, I guess, forgot that that's what it was.
Sure.
But I will say all of the, like the action adventure films of today, it's people who like Ben Burtt who are doing their thing at the highest level of like editing, cinematography,
yeah,
all of that kind of stuff, special effects.
For the genre too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty amazing and definitely worth recognizing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I haven't seen it in a very, very, very long time. I was not into Indiana Jones really. Mm. So what can I say?
Mm.
But that's it. So in the end, it shook out that Raiders of the Lost Ark had the most wins with 5. Chariots of Fire right behind with 4. And then On Golden Ponds and Reds both had 3. Arthur had 2.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of the way it is. And that's what I got to say about that today.
A classic ceremony.
Yeah, nothing too crazy on my end. So with that, why don't you tell us more about Chariots of Fire?
Yeah, I will. So of course, first we take you back to the year of 1981 when this film came out, starting with some famous births. Born in 1981, we have Elijah Wood, Justin Timberlake, Tom Hiddleston, Uzo Aduba, Stephanie Beatrice, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Josh Gad, Bryce Dallas Howard, Hayden Christensen, Jessica Alba, Rami Malek, Natalie Portman, Chris Evans, John Watts, Meghan Markle, Leslie Odom Jr., Jennifer Hudson, Ben Schwartz, Alexis Bledel, Beyonce, and Britney Spears.
Oh my gosh. Are you telling me that Alexis Bledel and Natalie Portman are the same age?
They are.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Weird.
And I also
Chris
like
Evans?
See Elijah Wood as
Elijah
way
Wood?
Younger than Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Or Tom Hiddleston is the exact same age as all of them,
I think,
too.
He's always seemed old to me.
Mm. He definitely seems way older than Elijah Wood, though.
He does.
Yeah.
Man. Maybe it's just the times in which they're immortalized. Alexis Bledel is always going to be Rory Gilmore to me, and so she's captured.
Well, and Elijah Wood and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I grew up knowing that
yeah,
they were kids.
Right.
Like, I was a kid when they were mostly a kid, too. So
or you
like,
were watching their movies in which they were kids.
Right. So, anyways.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's so weird to, like, be entering our timeline now. Like,
like these people share the same world that we do?
Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, way back when it was, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Here comes Jane Fonda. I'm like, well, she's old.
Boy.
I don't know.
Some debuts in 1981. We have Ben Affleck, Jason Alexander, Javier Bardem, Kim Basinger, Kenneth Branagh, James Cameron, Kevin Costner, Tom Cruise, Jeff Daniels, Holly Hunter, Alfred Molina, Sean Penn, Jeffrey Rush, Meg Ryan, Kathleen Turner, Denzel Washington, and Hugo Weaving.
Wow.
Quite a few fun ones in there. And
these are like my parents' heartthrobs.
Okay.
No, but that's like, I'm just contextualizing it, you know?
All right, great.
Okay, all right. Carry on.
On to the deaths in 1981. We have Norman Torog, director and screenwriter. Of course, at only 32 years old, he won Best Director for Skippy.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very early on. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was the record that he held for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
Until Damien Chazelle won Best Director as the youngest Best Director winner.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he got another nomination again for directing Boys Town. Next, we have Arthur O'Connell, who was nominated for Best Supporting Actor twice for Picnic and Anatomy of a Murder.
Both great movies.
Then we have William Wyler.
Oh,
who
we've no.
We've talked about many, many times. I believe that you did a whole episode on him. I can't remember.
If but not, we talked about him a lot.
He, of course, is a director. He received 12 nominations for Best Director,
yeah,
which is the most still, and he had 3 wins.
Give us the hits.
He won his collaborators more awards than any other director. So all of the actors that he worked with,
yes,
cinematographers.
Yeah. I mean, he's known as an actor's director.
Yeah. But even technical awards, like
people who
worked with him technically,
they won.
Won more than other people who worked significantly with other directors.
Gotcha.
13 of his films were nominated for Best Picture, which is crazy. He also won the Irving G. Thalberg Memorial Award.
I mean, deserved.
Yes.
As I said, and you ignored me, give me the hits.
Oh, I mean, so many. Roman Holiday, mm-hmm. Ben-Hur, mm-hmm. The Best Years of Our Lives, mm-hmm. Wuthering Heights.
Mm-hmm. I think what I respect Jezebel. The most about him is the diversity of his films.
Yeah.
I think that's what's amazing. He does rom-coms, he does epics, he does, you know...
Family drama.
Family dramas, literary pieces like Wuthering Heights. Like,
yeah.
Just amazing. Such an artist.
Next we have Paddy Chayefsky. Screenwriter. He won three Academy Awards for original and adapted for Marty, The Hospital, and Network.
I loved Marty.
Still to this day, he is the only solo writer to win three awards.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So any other writer who has won three, and there are several, have shared some of those wins with
someone
co-writers.
Else. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Next, we have Melvin Douglas, who was an actor.
Aww.
He won one Academy Award, and he also won the Triple Crown of Acting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Anita Luce, who we've talked about a few times. She was a screenwriter. She was the first woman staff writer in Hollywood in 1912. She wrote the novel Gentlemen Prefer Blondes that was turned into the famous movie. She also wrote the Broadway play adaptation of Gigi.
Right. That's what we talked about her the most with.
Yes. She was also nominated for Best Original Screenplay for the film San Francisco, which she co-wrote. Next, we have Vera Ellen, who was an actor, singer, dancer. She danced frequently with Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire, and then very famously with Danny Kaye in White Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, so sad.
Another famous Hollywood heartthrob.
Oh, gosh.
Gloria Graham.
Aww.
Famous actress, nominated twice for Best Supporting Actress, won once for The Bad and the Beautiful.
Hmm.
She is featured, of course, probably in her most famous role today in It's a Wonderful Life.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was also in The Greatest Show on Earth, which we talked about.
Yes.
And famously did all of her own stunt work.
Yes, which is amazing.
Yes. Next.
Oh my gosh, stop giving me that look.
Edith Head.
No!
Costume designer. She is the winningest costume designer and woman in Academy history with 8 wins, and she had 35 nominations as well.
Edith. Edith, a woman among women.
Oh, yeah. We have a whole episode about
her. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Kristen goes into detail about her life and her career.
And her impact on so many people and style and fashion and the women that she made icons.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. The power of the dress.
Then we have William Holden, actor who won an Academy Award for Best Actor in Stalag 17.
Mm-hmm.
That was his only win. Then we have Jack Albertson, who was an actor. He won Best Supporting Actor once for The Subject Was Roses. He also won the Triple Crown of Acting.
Mm.
So a lot of people would know him most from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. He plays Grandpa Joe.
Okay, that was what I was going to say, but I couldn't remember.
Who goes, played. Of course, with Charlie to the factory.
Yeah.
He
does a good dance.
He does. And then last but not least is Natalie Wood.
Ooh.
Famous actress, nominated for 3 Academy Awards, and died extremely tragically.
Yes.
In a way that is still considered a mystery to this day.
Yes. If you like true crime podcasts, you've heard about it.
Yeah, one of those
but
weird
Hollywood
deaths. But
that's not how we're
going to
remember her, of
that,
course.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways.
Remember her for her other work.
Her insane antics that got her lots of acting work.
She was an interesting person.
She was determined.
She was, you know what? And I respect that. Yep. I respect it.
One of the most determined. Then some bits of news from Hollywood during this year. MGM purchases United Artists from Transamerica Corporation for $350 million
mm-hmm.
as Transamerica dumps its entertainment holdings and United Artists struggles to recover from the losses incurred by Michael Cimino's follow-up to The Deer Hunter, Heaven's Gate, which is still considered one of the worst flops and worst films in general in Hollywood history. It lost more than $40 million.
Gosh.
So.
Yikes.
Yes, very bad. It may be one of the worst follow-up films for any director to follow a Best Picture win. Mm. Like, very weird. Mm. Marvin Davis purchases 20th Century Fox for $720 million.
Boy.
So lots of studios.
Lots of switching hands.
Yeah. And on trend, Norman Lear and business partner Jerry Parenchio purchase Avco Embassy and rename it Embassy Pictures after its original name when the company was started by producer Joseph Levine. Mm. So we've talked about Embassy and Levine a few times, but now Norman Lear owns it. So good for him.
Yeah, there you go.
We also have the 33rd Primetime Emmys this year. Taxi and Hill Street Blues are the main winners. Judd Hirsch and Danny DeVito win Best Actor and Supporting Actor in a Comedy for Taxi. Anthony Hopkins wins Outstanding Lead in a Limited Series for portraying Hitler in The Bunker. And Vanessa Redgrave wins for acting as well.
Oh boy.
And Jane Alexander gets an Emmy win.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we just talked about her in the Kramer versus Kramer episode.
Which, good for her.
Yeah.
She deserves it.
Then we have the 36th Tony Awards. So this year in Broadway history, several of the biggest theaters are being demolished after a failed Save the Theaters campaign and protest from the Broadway community, including the Marasco, the Fulton Theater, which in its current state in the 80s was named the Helen Hayes Theater.
Right.
The Bijou, the Gaiety, and the Astor are all being demolished to make room for the new Marriott Marquis Hotel and the Marquis Theater.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
So one of the biggest and most important theaters on Broadway was picked to celebrate for the evening, and that was the Imperial. And so they did a medley of songs for this ceremony that all had their original productions at the Imperial, which included songs from Rosemarie, Jubilee, On Your Toes, Annie Get Your Gun, The Most Happy Fella, Fiddler on the Roof, Parade, Carnival, Oliver, and Pippin. Hmm. So that's what they did.
Nice.
The best play for the evening was The Life and Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby, which beat out favorite Crimes of the Heart.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
And then Best Musical was Nine.
Ah, okay.
Beating out Dreamgirls.
Oh, my.
Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
My.
And Pump Boys and Dinettes.
I'm not surprised.
But yeah, some huge musicals that year.
Wow, that's crazy.
Pretty amazing. And then most innovative production of a revival was Othello.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
It beat a revival of Medea.
Oh, wow. We're reaching back into the classics.
And the first revival of My Fair Lady.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah. So congrats to that production of Othello. Dreamgirls had the most nominations with 13 and the most wins with 6, even though it
didn't win
Best Musical. So that brings us to Chariots of Fire. I will first give a recap. The story follows two men as they rise the ranks of competitive running on their way to the 1924 Olympics, Harold Abrahams and Eric Little. Abrahams has recently enrolled in Cambridge University and is trying to overcome the anti-Semitism there while competing in and winning several national championships in running and trying to make time for his new love, Sybil, a famed Gilbert and Sullivan actress. Eric Little is a Scotsman born in China to missionary parents who has returned to Scotland to pursue competitive running against his family's wishes. After Little and Abrahams finally race against each other, with Little winning by a significant margin, Abraham seeks out the help of trainer Sam Musabini so that the next time he races against Little, he can beat him. After a few years of racing and training, both runners qualify for the 1924 Olympics, but Little, who won't run on a Sunday, cannot qualify for his individual event. Another Olympic teammate, Andrew Lindsay, who has already won a medal, drops out of his second event so Little can take his spot instead. Abrahams is badly beaten in his first event, the 200 meters, but uses the failure to spur him on in his second event, the 100 meters. Abrahams and Little both win their respective races and are vindicated for the years of training and effort they have been through.
Can I just say, why didn't they race each other? I know it's history, but like, why did they build this movie up like we got a rivalry and then they never race each other? They're both winners in their own way. Come on.
I mean, that's what happened.
Yeah, but like, then take a different angle. Just talk about Abrams and his dealing with anti-Semitism or Little and his, you know, missionary stuff or whatever. But like, they pit these two people against each other and then there's no face-off?
I mean, it's history.
I don't care. Okay, I'm saying it's bad storytelling.
All right. Well, this film had a budget of $5 million. And in the United States, it grossed $60 million. So it was number 7 at the box office in 1981. So David Putnam was working on ideas for his next feature and wanted to make something along the lines of A Man for All Seasons, about a character or characters who were deeply convicted and bound to follow their conscience.
Great.
So now you can see why it's a little bit boring.
Yep, now I know why I didn't resonate with it.
Around this time, while thumbing through an old Olympic stats book, while he was
as you do
stuck at home with the flu or something in a rented Malibu mansion, the book was An Approved History of the Olympic Games. He came upon the 1924 Olympics and discovered Eric Little and Harold Abrahams. He had not heard of either of them before this moment, but their records and wins stood out to him, and he began doing more research on the two of them. He felt that the mix of their story and the themes that he was interested in pursuing were perfect for his next film. About this later, he said, quote, "Sport is such a clean, simple metaphor."
Blech.
As he grew more and more interested in their stories, he began broadening his research, looking for people who knew them and their Olympic counterparts. He ended up talking to friends, family members, other competitors, coaches, teachers. He placed ads in local papers, put up flyers near their hometowns or other places of residence to gather as much information as he could about the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
He brought on actor and screenwriter Colin Welland to start writing the script. The two of them continued their extensive research project and began discovering letters that the various men on the British Olympic team had written to one another or to their parents that quickly became one of the main through lines in the story. So all of the letters in the film are read verbatim as they were written in real life. Slowly but surely, each family or person featured in the story gave their approval to be featured in the film, except for Douglas Lowe, who was supposed to be the third protagonist that Welland wanted to feature. So instead, he created a sort of amalgam of people as the character Andrew Lindsay, who was Abraham's friend from Cambridge and the hurdler.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They had just missed their opportunity to interview Abrahams by only a month or two as he was very ill, and then he passed away in January of 1978.
Oh, what a bummer.
But they did attend his memorial service, which is the basis for the opening and closing scenes of the film where they attend his memorial service.
Makes sense.
As more of the pieces of the story came into focus, Putnam was able to secure the initial funding for the movie from Goldcrest Pictures, who then sold the whole project to Allied Stars, though Goldcrest would keep a percentage of the eventual profit. With more funding in place, Putnam hired director Hugh Hudson, who was relatively untested in feature filmmaking and had done only commercials and documentaries up to this point in his career. He also kind of wanted him for that reason because it was so much like true life material.
Yeah.
And thought his documentary bent would help. They had also worked together in advertising in the early 70s.
Hmm.
So they had a working relationship already. Mm-hmm. Putnam was also interested in casting the leads with unknown talent to make the story feel more fresh and new. So he looked to the theater for his leads and cast Ian Charlson as Little and Ben Cross as Abrahams.
That is very smart and also, you know, respect people who pull from the theater.
Well, and Ben Cross is one of the most, like, well-known Shakespeare actors in England at this time. So he is, like, extremely classically trained and has a lot of experience. Putnam ended up filling the supporting cast with more well-known English talent, including Ian Holm as Coach Musabini and John Gielgud as one of the Cambridge leaders of the school. Ironically, Gielgud ended up beating out Ian Holm for the Oscar for supporting actor with his role in Arthur. So there's that. Putnam and Hudson were excited to film at Cambridge, but were not allowed to after the higher-ups at Cambridge were worried about the bad press that might come from the anti-Semitism they were meant to have shown to Abrahams.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have done it if you don't want people to know about it.
Yeah. So Hudson contacted his alma mater, Eton College, and they allowed the Cambridge scenes to be filmed there instead. Mm. Later, the people at Cambridge deeply regretted their decision after the film was so well received.
Yeah.
And in England, there was some controversy and criticism because many people from England could tell it wasn't
Cambridge. That's what I was just going to say. I don't personally know,
right.
But Cambridge is very iconic.
Yeah.
And if you're an English person, don't you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So they ended up apologizing to Putnam for not allowing it.
Huh.
Yeah. Of course, one of the most lasting iconic pieces of the film is the music and the use of slow motion. Like I said, without which some historians don't think the film would have been even remembered beyond the 80s.
Yeah.
Vangelis is the composer who composed the iconic score, which is very anachronistic to the film because it's all extremely, extremely 80s, and the film is very not 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
He composed the entire film only by himself, and he played it all by himself just on a synthesizer.
Oh my gosh.
Which... I mean, it's cool that he was able to create such an iconic piece of music.
Yeah, yeah.
But...
And I, like, no, not knocking the music, for sure. Like, it's
yeah.
a good piece of music.
It's just weird.
Yeah, it's just a weird phenomena.
The film ended up premiering in March of 1981. It also played at Cannes that year in 81, and it got some critical acclaim there. It ended up being the highest grossing film in Britain this year. It was actually even more popular in America, and still to this day is the highest grossing foreign film to play in America in history.
Oh my. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that is part of why I think this is so popular, because it was just so much. I mean, it was seen so much by people in America. And part of the other reason why a lot of people think it got some more hype is because the Olympics were about to be in America.
Oh, okay. So there's some Olympic hype going on already. People are excited.
So it was the 1984 Olympics, which were in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
So everybody was getting, I mean, kind of like now, we're already getting hyped for the next Olympics in Los Angeles, and they're still like 5 years from now.
Yeah.
So this was like 2 or 3 years away.
Gotcha.
Or less.
So there's already interest in the subject matter, and it feels very American, even though it's international.
Right. It's also another sports film, and a sports film just won within the past 5 years, which was Rocky.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which was also kind of surprising that it won. There's also about to be a huge string of biopics.
Ah.
So that's one of the more common genres to win in the 80s is a biopic.
Okay.
And since there was so much, I mean, there was not really a true front runner through, if you look at the other awards that led up to this one, like the Golden Globes and Critics Awards and stuff, they all kind of split between Reds, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Chariots of Fire, and On Golden Pond.
Yeah.
Funny enough, Chariots of Fire, at the time, the Golden Globes, a foreign film could not be considered for any of the best film categories except for best foreign film.
Ah. Okay.
So Chariots of Fire won best foreign film at the Golden Globes. I think also because of that, I don't know, people were just feeling the feel good thing too.
Yeah.
It was a very non-controversial movie.
Yeah. And do you think like the religious components probably played into that too?
I mean, maybe a little bit. Ronald Reagan was definitely pushing for more religion in film and more like wholesome film.
Well, and what I was going to say is like the last several films that have been like intimate family drama discussion stuff has been a little bit like unnerving in a way where it's like showing you contemporary issues and like the way that things have changed. And I think that there's something comforting to a lot of American people at the time about like, here's a film with people who are like convicted to hold to their morals and stuff.
Well, and every like almost 15 years or so, the British people somehow get like 2 or 3 best picture wins.
They're like weasel in there real quick and say, I'll take that, thank you.
Yeah, so it's been 13 years since
Tom Jones,
the last British film won best picture. Which I believe is Oliver.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Or A Man for All Seasons. I mean, those two are right in that mix of that,
that time
of British films. Of course, Gandhi is about to win, which is another British film.
Mm-hmm.
So every now and then it's like, I don't know.
Feeling the culture.
I guess so.
Yeah. Interesting.
For some reason or another.
They're like, stop. The Americans are like, stop making us cry. Give us something. Give us something we can watch that's going to be pleasant.
We need some escapism. So that's like pretty much all I have to share about this.
Great.
It was not, like we were saying, it was a little surprising, but it's not the worst film that has won Best Picture.
Certainly not. No. I mean, we've watched some doozies.
But I think more surprising is that some of the other films didn't win.
Yeah.
Not that this did win.
I think it's a, to me at least, it's just like a marker of the time too, where it's like, if all these movies went up against each other today, it would shake out differently.
Right. For sure. So with that, we come to the end of the episode and we thank the Academy for things relating to this film, these people in films, the year in film. What would you like to thank the Academy for today, Kristen?
Well, first I would like to thank the Academy for, people who are willing to take a chance on no-namers.
Oh.
I always think that's nice. I always appreciate it when there's a movie with good performances from people who aren't famous.
Well, and it's a fairly common practice of like, I need this story to come across and I need the story to be the focal point of this.
Yeah, you don't want it impeded by a famous person that people have opinions about already.
Yeah, and we've talked about this so many times with like, I don't know, big name actors who you just can't see them as anything else but them.
Yeah.
And then they become the focal point.
Right. You know, and like there are movies like that that really stand out to me, like, you know, say what you want about Coda, which won a couple years ago. But one thing I liked about it was that there were a lot of people in it that you just, you don't know who they are. And so you're just watching the movie. Like you're just watching this
family. Yeah, except for Marley Matlin. Like everyone else is relatively obscure.
Yeah.
And
you're kind of just like watching the story and appreciating it for that rather than like for Margot Robbie or something.
Oh.
Which I always appreciate. Hmm. But I'm a little distracted by.
I mean, it does take you out of Little Women. That
it does.
They're
right.
All in Little Women.
Yeah, it's like, that's Emma Watson.
Right.
In Little Women. That's Saoirse Ronan. That's Florence Pugh. That's, you know.
Meryl
I just saw
Streep.
Her. Yeah, right. That's, yeah. That's Bob Odenkirk? Question mark?
Yeah. So.
Yes, yes. That. Yeah.
Anyways.
Laura Dern be Laura Derning.
True.
All good things, though. Sorry. I have to say, it's all good.
We love Little Women. I would like to thank the Academy for recognizing two of the best older actors this year.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you can't make a film about old people without old actors.
I mean, you could. We have category for best makeup now.
Well, it comes across so much better. I mean, it is very... I'll talk about them more, of course, in the film. But, like, their performances are just so good and so natural. I mean, they're two of the most famous best actors in Hollywood history, so of course they're good.
Well, and of course Jane Fonda and Henry Fonda both talked about how personal the story is and like the
well,
movie it
and
processes.
Both of them are just so themselves.
And
this movie could not have been made without Henry Fonda and Katharine Hepburn. And so congrats to them.
That's special and important. I would like to thank the Academy for men that used to dress well. That was my big takeaway from this movie. Why have we given that up? And I'm not saying that not everyone dresses well, because there are definitely men that do. But they had so many accessories. They had so many layers. They had so many patterns and styles. Like, I was thinking to myself, like, how frustrating it is, because you've talked about this before, for men that there are such limited options on like what you can wear. Like for shirt collars, there's like a couple of types of collar you can wear and that's it. Those are your options, you know, long sleeve, short sleeve, whatever. But these men, they used to wear so many interesting silhouettes and cuts and styles and textures. And I'm so sad that that is not the way it is now, but it was great to see it. I don't know if it was truthful or not, but I loved it.
I mean, it was Academy worthy.
It was to me. I mean, man, imagine how much better men would look if they put that kind of effort into providing options like that for men. Like if clothing manufacturers and designers gave that many options, it'd be so nice.
Hmm.
Maybe they do and people just don't do it, or I don't see it. I don't know.
Who knows? There's some reason out there. And I would like to give my final thanks to a Renaissance man.
Okay.
Like Warren Beatty, who are doing it all.
Yeah.
Of course, there are Renaissance women as well. Greta Gerwig. But I just love the people who are like, just love filmmaking so much that they just do everything.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about a handful of them throughout our time doing the podcast. But Warren Beatty's the it guy right now, mm-hmm. who's got his hand in everything. And I think that's just so fun.
Yeah.
And he's been able to be good at all of them too.
Yeah. In a way that's remarkable. He got nominated for each thing. Yeah.
Crazy.
All at once.
Yeah. And won.
And won.
So congrats to him.
Yes. Big congrats.
And with that, we leave you.
Yes. Thanks for joining us today.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who have been listeners, you may have seen some of our platform change stuff over time, but we want to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast. And if you haven't already, there are some incentives for us if you subscribe on Spotify, specifically, since that is the like head platform that we're a part of now. So if you are not subscribed on Spotify, first of all, thank you for listening, however you listen. A listen is a listen, and we love sharing stuff with you, and we have no one to share it with if you don't listen. So first of all, thank you. If you are listening on another platform, give Spotify a try. Or you don't have to, but still subscribe on there and listen on whatever platform you like. Whatever works for you. It just it does help us out.
Yes. So thank you.
Yes.
And leave us a rating while you're at it.
Yeah.
You can rate us on Spotify or Apple.
Or Apple, whatever. Any ratings or messages, we appreciate. Any time you leave something like that, it helps encourage other people to listen and maybe believe we're qualified in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I promise we do research stuff and prepare for this podcast.
As our regular listeners know.
As they should know. But, you know, we appreciate you confirming that.
Yes. So thank you.
Yes.
And then join us for our next episode, a new Academy Archives, in which I'll be discussing On Golden Pond.
And I will be discussing Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Thank the Academy. You can follow us on social media at Thank the Academy Podcast on Instagram and at Thank Academy Pod on Twitter. If you enjoy listening to the show, make sure to leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe on your favorite streaming platform. The theme song was created by the one and only Noah Huizinga. Join us next week on Thank the Academy.